I am shocked by the way the people that we have been in business with are treating us. I cannot believe it, quite frankly.
Danny Trejo, in addition to being an actor, has a line of taco stores and restaurants here in Los Angeles. And so, and
what do we want?
Shame on them. They stand on the wrong side of history at this very moment. We stand in solidarity, in unprecedented unity. Our union and our sister unions and the unions around the world are standing by us.
You know, we're all not Tom Cruise, you know, so it's like we gotta support our money and we gotta support. Hey, Newsom, yeah, call me.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Rain on Your Parade with J.L. Covan. I am J.L. Covan. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your kind comments. I'm assuming there were kind comments. There might have been a lot of hate mail after the first episode, but we're excited to be here. Hello, Mike.
Hello. Hello, J.L. How you doing?
Killing it, Mike. Killing it.
You well, had I one did, job. I did it better the first time.
You had one. Yeah, you're revealing that this is a second take. How dare you? You're good?
I'm good. I'm here. I'm focused and I'm ready to rock.
So that wasn't a stroke you were just having?
No, just long day.
Okay, long day. Everybody, it's 3 p.m. It's not exactly a long day. Unless you're a baker, it's not a long day.
Yeah, yeah.
No, happy to be here in Slickback Studios. And I think that may just be my thing where I pretend like that was auto-filled in every week.
I think everybody loves it. What do you do?
Yeah, no, I got it. The most feedback I got was I hated the 49 and a half minutes of the show, except for that one time where you pretended to be a robot that said Slickback Studios. That was like real potential. Like Rick Rubin, if he were producing this podcast, he'd go get rid of everything else.
Yeah.
But that Slickback Studios thing, that's the key.
We're going to build the song around.
Exactly.
It's like a sample.
Did you see Rick Rubin on 60 Minutes?
I did not. No.
It was very interesting, and my favorite part that I'm ripping off right now is Mary Jane's Last Dance by Tom Petty. Mm-hmm. Tom Petty sent him a demo to review, and he basically said the whole thing was crap, except in between songs, one of the guitarists just went, beener, bam, 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 and he said, that's your hit. Build something off it. Isn't that great?
That is pretty
amazing.
Isn't
that fucking great?
Yeah, yeah.
He said, build it off that, and that became Mary Jane's Last Dance. And it's like, there's a lot of bullshit people in this world.
Yeah.
But when you have the track record that Rick Rubin does, it's hard to dismiss anything, especially when you hear that story.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, he clearly does have a Midas touch.
Yeah.
And then the next day, of course, a lot of social media posts about, I love Rick Rubin. He's great, but another story of a white man doing the least and becoming wildly successful. And I was like, oh, good thing you threw in that I love Rick Rubin, but.
Right. Because this tweet otherwise would imply that I don't love him.
Right. In fact, that he represents all that's wrong yes. with the patriarchy, white supremacy, art, and the world.
Right.
But okay. Oh, but you love. Okay. Phew. I'm sure Rick Rubin, if he gets out of his like cave to read your tweet, which of course he won't, he'd be like, this is mostly shitting on me, I think. I'm going to go back and listen to Crickets and come up with the next Drake hit. But happy to be here. And a lot of the feedback related to people liking me not being alone.
I think that that's probably a good move for you. Like we've all been worried about you, JL.
Well, yeah, that being with another human being on the podcast brings out my best. I have to suppress.
Yeah.
You know, which psychologists and therapists always say is the best thing to do with your problems is
yeah.
stuff them down, be a happy clown, and, you know, just find a dark corner of a bar later
yeah.
and deal with your issues. So thank you for all the positive feedback, everybody. By the way, some gigs coming up that I can tell you about. There will be more filling my calendar, of course, but I know I'll be in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, September 15th and 16th. Seattle and Portland in early October and LA October 20th at Flappers. So the gigs are filling in slowly, but there will be more, but I figure I'll just let you know now so you can definitively find other plans for those particular evenings. Oh, JL, I was going to go, but 3 hours ago, I got tickets to a new movie.
I forgot. It's my daughter's wedding. Whoops.
Oh, JL, it's a Thursday. I can't get off work. Okay, you didn't have to let me know that.
Yeah, right.
You could have kept that to yourself. But now I hate you.
Yeah. So don't come to the next show either.
Yeah. You won't be invited. And my special is out. My first special, Tall Boy. It's on my YouTube. It's totally free. So go watch that. And I do know we're closer and closer to half blackface being released. We just have no idea where yet. But that is Tall Boy is my casino. If we're going to liken my career to mob movies, mm-hmm. Tall Boy is my casino. A very respectable, a lot of people like it, a lot of great things about it. But my godfather is half blackface.
Wow.
I'm skipping Goodfellas, going right to The Godfather. And we've established this already. Godfather 2 is not the best movie ever. It's The Godfather 1.
We'll argue about that until the end of time.
Well, you know what? We won't. Because it's just a fact. And you spit on the grave of not only Marlon Brando, but the Native American people and civil rights causes he fought for. That's what you do when you disregard The Godfather 1.
I didn't know I was doing that.
When you treat it like the Scottie Pippen to Godfather 2's Michael Jordan, which is wrong.
Still a Hall of Famer.
And whatever you say, Godfather 3 is the Larsa Pippen of the Godfather movies.
Yeah, I think that's correct.
And I don't care how empowered she is. I think fucking the son of your ex-husband's coworker is gross.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't care.
No argument here.
Well, you know what? I thought you might argue because you're real on this empowerment biz. We had an interesting conversation before the episode about pornography. And needless to say, you won't be invited to my evangelical Christian meeting after the show.
Oh, I had plans that weekend anyway.
Well, okay. Well, we're going to get to the topic very shortly, but I have to assure the audience who may find me too wordy or I'm not attractive enough for the reels.
Sure.
That we're going to get to it eventually. We're going to get high-powered finance bros wearing tight suits. You know, they're going to tell you how to live your life. They're going to tell you how to disrespect women and make money. That'll make you an alpha bro. We're going to have those guys on eventually. We're going to have porn stars on, obviously. Malcolm Gladwell said it the best. To be a successful podcast, you've got to be the 10,000th podcast to do something. Mm-hmm. If you're not, you're wasting your time. So we're going to have porn stars talking about their favorite position, whether they date fans, you know, if all their body parts are natural, who's good in bed, who's bad, who do you like working with? We're going to have all that stuff. But for now, it's going to be more of a humor and talkie. Less of a cleavy, more of a talkie.
Less of a cleavy?
Cleavage.
Oh, I see. Okay.
God, I thought I was speaking in like cool, hip, young people shorthand.
No.
That only works for Chris DeStefano.
Yes.
Okay. Right. I was trying to be him. He's very successful.
Yeah.
We used to do bar shows and open mics 10 years ago. And, you know, I called him the 99th degree because I thought he looked like the missing member of 98 degrees. Mm-hmm. And he just skyrocketed.
Yeah.
He absolutely skyrocketed. Good for him. Good for all the people who skyrocket. I'm more like a Greyhound bus of comedy, just chugging along, miserable, sad, impoverished, but getting people where they need to go.
Breaking down along the way.
Yeah.
on the way to the middle of the country.
Yeah. I'm literally and figuratively the Greyhound bus of comedy. But guys, I want to talk about SAG and WGA. Is that how they refer to themselves? The Writers Guild of America? WGA?
WGA.
Matt Rife is just their mascot.
It's Matt Rife, Jamie Kennedy.
Do you think Jamie Kennedy sits around going, so let me get this straight. I was ahead of my time.
He was. It was like him and Tom Green were both ahead of their time. Isn't that insane to think about?
This could be a theme for an entire podcast. People who were ahead of their time who now can't stop stabbing themselves in the face seeing what we've become. Like, think about three-point shooters from like the 80s and 90s, yeah, where it's like, oh, all you can do is shoot three-pointers. Well, you're gonna sit on the bench,
right,
get the league minimum, but we'll bring you out for the All-Star weekend to lose to Larry Bird,
right,
or some other reputable player who can also shoot threes.
Right.
Now these guys would be getting paid like mid-level exceptions, just get averaging 15 points a game. You know, the Craig Hodges and Jason Caponos of the world must be like, Jason, are you kidding me?
Oh my God.
Right?
It's a blast from the past.
Right. These are guys who you'd look at the stats. It's like, oh, he's leading the league with in 82 games. He was 39 of 79 from 3-point range. Yeah, it's like, right. He's not even taking one a game.
Yeah.
He qualifies. Yeah. Now, if all you can do is shoot threes, they're like, will $200 million over 6 years suffice?
Yeah.
We know you can't.
Come, play for the Miami Heat.
Duncan Robinson, Williams College basketball product. We share that in common. Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
So you wonder about people seeing like, oh my God, if only I had like come up with this idea later. Like I watched Jamie Kennedy, like, don't be hating, yo. Yeah. Worst, justifiably treated like a horrible movie. But if you...
Well, I can justifiably, yes, because it was a horrible movie.
Right. But if he had just made that a TikTok character, yeah, 10 years later, he'd be headlining arenas.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And Tom Green, to be fair, I think was recognized for his quality back in the day. Mm-hmm. It was just not, he was ahead of his time, but at least people recognized what he was doing was a funny thing.
Yes.
But yeah, it would be much better to be that today.
Yes. Yeah.
So, but SAG and WGA, they're striking for more rights, more money, and disclaimer. Okay. And I talked about this with Mike before. I'm a Democrat, turning it off, woke, and pro labor, pro all that. Absolutely. One of my big complaints about stand-up comedy for almost my entire career has been the fact that there's really horrible treatment of the talent. There's no sort of pipeline to develop as a comedian. Basically, all you're ever hoping for is, and it's even worse now, is that some comedian takes you under their wing and makes you their sidekick or their bottom bitch if they're a pimp as well. Mm-hmm. Or that you blow up on social media. Now, none of those things necessarily foster a developed act.
Like,
in other words, you can become a good comedian if you have enough talent and drive, but you could also, there's very little incentive to do that. And if you are just a journeyman comedian like myself, where you like, I started doing open mics and then I got some guest spots and then I emceed and featured and then I featured for a long time. Then I got a few breaks, did a couple private gigs, this long path. It's the opportunities just aren't there because everything's being crowded out. Comedy's the worst. There's no art, I think, worse than comedy in terms of nurturing and developing career, sustainable lifestyles while working as a comedian. But you just grin and bear it, basically. Or in my case, complain relentlessly and get banned from different things.
Right. And label yourself the Greyhound bus of the, exactly, of the industry.
Exactly. Are any artists out there, feel free to like put my face, not a Photoshop. I want real art here.
Yes.
My face on a Greyhound
bus. For free.
Bus.
We want it
like
for free.
Like a Thomas the Tank Engine kind of vibe.
Yes.
For free, absolutely. For free. But we will maybe give you attribution, possibly.
Maybe.
If you pay us, we will give you attribution.
Yes.
Okay, fair enough.
But then we own the art.
And you as well.
And you, yes.
And you and any AI creations we make of you or your art.
Right. We are the studios in this scenario.
And we can have sex with all female relatives in your family.
Yeah.
That's just standard boilerplate today in Hollywood. So like if you think we're being, that's just boilerplate.
Yeah. Welcome to the business.
So anywho, But the SAG, what they're fighting for is, I think there's pay issues, but obviously the big threat they see is artificial intelligence, mm-hmm, AI, for those in the business. You know, I spelled it out, but you know, I want to be a common working man comedian here. I don't want to get bogged down in all the lingo, like, and show off, but AI to those in the know.
Yes.
And I've been perplexed by this. And I know you too have been perplexed by this, Mike, because our society over the last 40 years, it really started with Reagan, has treated organized labor the way we should have treated like the Klan.
Yeah.
Like they're a destructive force, hating on our freedoms, destroying our way of life, making everything expensive and awful for average working people. And it's lack of gratitude. We Reagan really began this relentless assault on organized labor. And it broke up. It was politically, it was smart because it broke up sort of the hold Democrats had on labor. You created divisions both with labor practices racially. You created divisions along racial lines because labor is obviously not a racial issue. And it's interesting that whenever people say things like Donald Trump, you know, he got that working class, that white working class vote.
Yes.
People seem to forget. There are a lot of working class people in this country who are not white, but it's become almost a shorthand for, you know, working class is almost a shorthand for white guys. And it's interesting to me that, and it's a good thing. Once again, disclaimer, what the actors and writers are doing, I think is a good thing. That's so we get that out of the way. But it's also perplexing to me because maybe it's the power of celebrity. Maybe it's their reach. Their social media reach, but it speaks to how uninformed or uninterested we are as citizens that this is like the hot button issue as far as labor goes. But Amazon, Starbucks, even though those articles will get like some coverage for sure when a store tries to organize, shouldn't the largest employers in this country, shouldn't that labor force be organized? It would make sense. Amazon workers, maybe them peeing in bottles because they have to get their deliveries is more important than I'm only getting paid for 10 episodes of writing a show. In 1990, I would have been paid for 22 plus residuals. Plus, I would have had multiple women on a casting couch wanting to service me.
Yes.
It's a bizarre thing because technology has come for so many industries, and it's one of the things that helped Donald Trump. Honestly, it helped pave the way. It helped grease the wheels.
Yeah,
lube the anus. Whatever the analogy we use all work. Now, it helped lube America's anus for him to fuck it because he understood or had been told or instructed that. You know, a lot of these jobs that went away or technology that created less of a need for working men and women in factories, in blue collar professions, they just went away. And it was treated as this sort of, well, what are you going to do? That's business. If you can be more efficient, you're more efficient. And, you know, to a certain extent, that's true. But we didn't take care of those people. And largely a robust, organized labor force would have been the bulwark against that. That's the point. Of organized labor, and people can complain. It runs up costs. It does all sorts of bad things, and labor leaders often get fat and lazy, literally and figuratively. But the alternative is a decimated workforce and loss of labor protections and rights across the board, even for non-labor workers.
Yeah.
So it's odd to me as an artist, if I can call myself that, it's odd to me to see this righteous, like, oh my God, AI's coming for our acting jobs and our writing jobs. And I'm like, some of the least important jobs in the world. I love it. And I don't begrudge any, because this is less a condemnation of actors and writers, although there is a level of obviously high self-importance to this. But it's also just a condemnation of our society. These are some of the least important jobs. Yes. And then I know somebody can say, well, what about the lighting technician and the, of course.
Who your don't have a union, by the way.
Right. Your jobs help their jobs for sure. That's without question, but it's like.
More important job and no union.
Right. But like, you know, teachers, like I thought we were talking before about supermarket workers where they don't have a union.
Yes.
And they were out there during the pandemic. They didn't have Tom Cruise yelling at customers to wear their masks, though I respect Tom Cruise for doing that on the set of Dead Reckoning. but it's so weird that our society is right now so focused on actors, which is like they should be last in line for this. Not that they shouldn't get it, not that them fighting for their rights and you know isn't important. They should. Everybody should have that right. That's what's the problem is that they seem to be one of the only unions with the power to really create some kind of conflict and change. Whereas the guy who works at Amazon or the supermarket or any sort of, you know, Amazon factory, he or she mm-hmm. or they may not have the means to just go, oh, well, I'll just get another job that treats me better.
That's really what it comes down to. I think it's so weird because with SAG and the WGA, there's a really big piece of the pie that they're not getting,
right?
Which obviously hurts them. And like in any economic, it's kind of like baseball or basketball. It's so interesting to watch those two sides interact, because it's like, it's easy to look at the baseball players union and say like, well, they're getting paid to play a game.
Right.
Like they should be happy with anything or whatever, but there's just so much money at stake that they should be getting the piece of that giant pie.
Right.
You know, but the other weird thing is that if actors, like you said, or writers in the WGA, you know, they're kind of working dream jobs. And right. if this doesn't work out for them, then they would just have to go get the regular job. Whereas like the Amazon guy, if he gets shut out of, or she or whoever gets shut out of driving a delivery truck, then they're fucked. There's like, there is no,
they meaning all three or just the non-binary
whoever happens to be.
I just want to know what they were talking about. This is an inclusive podcast,
Mike. Of course. Yeah.
Sorry if I'm shaking things up at Slickback Studios, but you know what? It's time for change.
Yeah. But it's tough. I just think it's like, that's the funny thing about it to me. And I think it's so funny that they're the first union in on AI, right? Where they're publicly saying like, we have to get this AI thing under control, because they're 100% right. But it's just like, it's going to be hard to get, I think, people in middle America to be like, oh, these actors who like AI is coming from my job and I fucking work at the Ford plant.
You got to get Kirk Cameron, Kevin Sorbo, and yes. Scott Baio on board.
Mel Gibson.
You know, they're trying to make our Christian movies
yes.
with fake Christians.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. We will not have Muslims in these movies.
Interesting sidebar. The Trump judges appointed to the bench have been increasingly religious, except towards one religion, Islam, in which, no, this is real, where they've been less than average. Like there was a study done where like religious plaintiffs or defendants are winning at a higher rate with Trump federal judges,
and Supreme,
except for Muslim plaintiffs and defendants who are losing more than they used to. It's hilarious. Like, it's almost like they're not pro-religion. They're pro-Christian.
Of course.
I know, but
I'm going to put the camera on me. Hold on. I'm shocked.
Well, you know, I like Dave Chappelle, my mentor on all things. I wanted to give Trump a chance.
Yes. Right.
Love how he skates on that one. I just love the fact that he did a monologue in front of America. I'm going to give him a chance. And people were like, okay, well, Dave's a genius. And then like 2 years later, what? No, I'm on trans people now. I don't remember that. That's the past. That's the past. I'm trying to talk about a woman in Wyoming getting a sex change, and I don't appreciate it. J.K. Rowling, everybody, J.K. Rowling. So, this is a bizarre sort of thing, because some of the things they're complaining about, AI is the biggest, because that's the most forward thinking. Like they know if they don't address it now, the next 10 years, it'll be too late.
They're
right. But also things like, you want smaller writers' rooms, and we don't get the residuals anymore. We're only doing 10 episodes, not 22, and we're not making the same money. This is the part where I really go, and I'm sorry. Like, I don't mean this to be flippant to any one person or any person who landed one writing job and is like, if this were 1990, I'd have it made. Hey, as a feature act for many years in comedy, if this were 1988, I'd have it made.
Right.
I wouldn't have a day job, because I'd get paid the exact same amount that they pay features in 2023.
Yeah.
But in 1988 costs, it's like, it's insane. Like, if you want to talk about an art treating its work rank and file like garbage, nobody can hold a candle to stand-up comedy. But the idea of like, I want the same treatment, but the shows aren't as long.
Yeah.
So you probably do. I would think you maybe do get more money per episode or something.
I wouldn't know. I mean, as somebody who's never worked in a writer's
But you don't
room,
get the residuals. But. You don't get the everything else that came with a 22-episode season on ABC, then going to like local syndication.
Yeah.
But at what point do you go, what do you want them to do about that? The market has changed.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there, I do think the studio system is at fault for fucking it up. I think that streaming, even though it was a consumer.
Well, they
habit,
might say, actually, we didn't fuck it up.
Why would they say
as
that?
As far as we're concerned.
Well, no, but I don't think it's a good model for them either. You know, I don't think that, I think Netflix is not in like financial trouble, but Netflix was in this place where they were in a period of growth. So they kept giving big checks to Chappelle and Sandler and people like that. And I kind of think those days are over for them.
And if you're mentioning comedy goats, Hannah Gadsby.
And Hannah Gadsby, right. got to get the three special deal. But you know what I mean? I think that it's like, I think that Netflix kind of changed the business for the worse.
Yes.
And I think that there's just kind of no going back. Like, we're not really going to go back to cable. I can't imagine that happens. So it's like, what really is the answer? They're going to have to share more money from the top. I mean, it's never a good look that you have executives that are making, you know, $100 million bonuses. But you can also argue that about the Actors Guild. It's like, you know, it's the same thing as having somebody like Leo making $20 million a picture. Like, the people at the top are always going to make an exorbitant amount of money. The people that are closer to the middle and the bottom are going to be struggling like that. It sucks that it's like that, but
yeah.
You have to fix the business model, which I don't know how they're going to do that. The AI thing to me is attainable. They can just put the law in. It's like banning fireworks.
Right.
I feel like these exist, but we're not allowed to use
them. Sorry, Katy Perry.
Yeah.
The other thing I will say about like, but to me, it's like, yeah, the business model is not sustainable. It's like, it's one of those things where I'm always jealous of the people who, it's almost like crypto.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, if you got in when they were handing out $20 million deals or $300 million deals, Ryan Murphy, $100 million, Shonda Rhimes, that money can't be taken away from you.
Yes.
You have that money. I know when the bubble will burst. When my special, my masterpiece, Half Blackface comes out and it's like HBO is actually interested in streaming it. And then the next day it'll be like when the stock market crashed in 1929, it'll be like Cyber Black Tuesday. And I'll be like, oh, there's no, my special, HBO no longer exists.
It's going to be on the front page of Variety. JL Kelvin kills streaming.
Yeah. So, but I do think there is an element to this where I go, but you're writing for a show. Like what, and this is a difficult thing because you want to be pro labor and not sound like some guy who's just trying to like score points by being like, Hollywood is elite and doesn't care.
Yeah.
I get it. It's your job. You're entitled to all these arguments and deals, but there's something wrong with our country that we have allowed men and women who need better protections to live.
Yeah.
That we don't have a robust sort of pro-labor environment. And one of the things they will say on this is, you'll hear, it's like, we're leading the way, we're highlighting this, and I'd love to think that's true. And yeah. I'm not claiming anybody involved doesn't care about labor. But no, like that's a pipe dream. When this is over, we will go back to being a country that continues to hammer organized labor, that continues to destroy the rights of working people. And that's it. Like it's a pipe dream if you think this is actually going to illuminate something for people.
And it's unfortunate. It's not like I think
it'd be great if it was.
Right.
Because it'd be easier to get behind if you were like, this is spearheading. Like if I saw things about like a nationwide walkout of Amazon,
right,
I'd be like, oh, hell yeah.
Right.
Like,
and that's the thing. You just never see like who is the head of the Amazon workers union effort? Do you know?
Well, there's the one union in Staten Island. Like right. they organize that. And I think that leader is like on the outs with the union.
Okay. And who's the leader of the WGA? Adam Conover.
Yes.
And who's the leader? Who's the leader of the Writers Guild of the Actors Guild?
Fran Drescher.
Right. So you know those two.
Yeah.
But we don't know, like the unions where I feel like people really, not again, not to say that the writers and the actors don't need, you know, again, pro labor, but you know, the people that are gonna, whose lives are like literally in jeopardy if they don't get their
their working situation handled. We don't really know anything about those causes, and they never get put on TV.
And I'm not
as important.
I'm not making that argument of a teacher makes 80 grand, but
no, I know.
So and so, like LeBron James makes 30 million. Yes, he's worth that on the market.
Right.
But to say that, the people who often say that aren't actually fighting to get teachers more money or supporting a teacher's union who are not perfect.
Right.
Like, let's not, you know, but it's like the unions are so often used as like rhetoric. I mean, working people are used as like rhetorical weapons just to shit on. It's the Blue Lives Matter of like economic arguments. Yeah. It's like, you never said Blue Lives Matter ever until Black Lives Matter became a necessary thing. Then all of a sudden, Blue Lives Matter.
Right.
You didn't give a shit, or you might have given a shit, but you didn't. It wasn't a movement. It wasn't a thing. You simply used it to hit, to have like a weapon to hit.
It's a counterattack.
It wasn't an actual stance of support. Or, and that's what people will often do with working people. But I think in this case, there needs to be more of a reckoning with how we have treated unions and working people in general.
Yeah.
And I think to some extent, unions need to have a little bit of a come to Jesus moment, especially like construction unions and stuff. The Second Avenue subway, it's like, it was going to cost $2 billion and be done in 3 years. Instead, it took 9 decades and $1 trillion. I'm exaggerating. There's something.
It was like an urban legend for my entire life.
Right. There's something for three stops.
Yes.
I thought the shit would be going to like the Bronx all the time. Now that's an area where it's like, hey, unions, is coming from, and maybe it has to come from within the party, but then you get the Democratic Party, then you get accused by certain wings of being like anti-labor, corporate Democrats.
Right.
Well, now you're not being realistic. There needs to be an idea that organized labor and working people are a real priority, but it's not a blank check.
Yeah.
We want to make your lives better, but you need we need like 20% of the Amazon Bezos efficiency put into things, but not the pee in a water bottle or you get fired if you don't deliver all the packages level of corporate mercenary culture.
Yes.
And I support the actors and the writers. I have no idea. I don't think I'm in SAG, but I did get a residual from them for my appearance on Billions.
I think we've both done SAG work, but we're not in SAG.
Once again, so this is about me already. I guess we all just do SAG stuff now. No big deal.
We all, meaning you and I, yes.
No.
We all, the whole world.
I was sitting in an elite perch in this studio, and now I'm one of you.
That's what happens when you work with the Gucci of podcast producers.
Gucci Mike instead of Gucci Mane.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay.
I'll adopt that nickname.
Well, the thing I want to talk about, I think I've made my compelling labor case.
Yeah.
Because it's weird and I have no solution, but I think as a country, we need to support, if your local Starbucks wants to unionize, it should be just as important, if not more so, than the Hollywood people doing it. And I feel like I have to keep repeating this.
Yes.
I am in support of what they're doing. But the idea that technology can come for every working person in this country, Starbucks baristas, by the way, must fucking hate the mobile order system.
Oh, like a nightmare, doesn't
it? Can we quadruple your work with less smiles, tips, and human interaction for the same pay? I mean, it's
so
like,
bad.
You're like, now you've gone from barista to barista/factory worker. Yes. Yep. It's intense sometimes. Yep. And I look at that and I go, their job got shittier.
Yeah.
Starbucks profits definitely went up. And Starbucks as an employer, pretty good.
Yeah.
Like relatively speaking, still bizarre that they're still very anti-union. Mm-hmm. That makes me suspicious. But they've had a pretty good corporate culture as things go. But so what if your show only has 10 episodes? Guess what? And I'm going to do my Sebastian Maniscalco voice. So you only get paid for 10 episodes. I don't understand the problem. You do 10 episodes of a show and you want 22 episodes of pay? Nah, well, aren't you embarrassed? If I do one show on stage, I don't get paid for 30 shows. Where is the math? Well, I don't understand the math. This left-wing math.
I haven't seen this before, but it's a good Maniscalco.
Well, thank you. but I think it applies.
Yeah.
It applies here where it's like, I get it. And that's where you negotiate. I think that's the key, is that they're willing to make some concessions on pay and things like that. So that kind of bridges that gap.
Yeah.
But the, and the AI thing is very important. But this idea of like, we used to get paid all this extra money. Well, now you don't.
Right.
And I it's hard not to feel flippant about that. It's like, you know what? I've done a lot of feature work. In 1988, you'd get a hotel.
Yes.
And $700 and some cocaine probably. You know what you get 25 years later? No hotel, $600. That's not adjusted for dollars. Like that's, I mean.
Well, dude, and also just comedy in New York City in general, you used to hear stories about people that were kind of like in their prime. I would guess right around the time you probably started.
Yep.
That were making 1984. A living. No,
2004,
like early 2000s, like those guys, they would talk about kind of like working the cellar, getting enough money to live in New York City as a comedian and really not have another job. They were full time comedians and they'd like write in the daytime and do all this stuff. And that life doesn't exist anymore either. You know? So things do change. And I do think, I guess that is really the point of the strike, is that they're trying to figure out a middle ground to where like the studios that have fucked up the business model, a way that it's like a two-way street where it works for both people. But in the onset, it's hard to not look at that and feel everything that you're saying, where you're just kind of like, guys, like these aren't real jobs. Like they're not like real jobs compared to.
Right. You are doing work. You work hard.
Yes. You have a dream job.
But you have a dream job, right. And that doesn't entitle you to anything less. And that's, I hate always repeating this because you're always afraid of that clip or out of context thing where it's like, people go, he says, who gives a shit?
Right.
And I'm like, no, I get it and I give a shit. But it's like, I think the real problem here is America needs to do better, which it won't.
Yes.
But it needs to. And I think when you complain about certain things, and I don't want to be that guy who's like, well, comedy sucks too, so fuck you. No, just because I'm miserable doesn't mean everybody else should be. I'd like it to be that way, but so be it. But you can't, it's not a winning argument as far as I'm concerned to be like, we used to make more money when we made more shows. Now we make less shows. We make less money. That's not fair. You make 10 episodes of a show and you want 22 episodes of money. Aren't you embarrassed? Anyway. But yeah, that's sort of the serious, mildly serious take, but we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I want to talk about AI and stand-up comedy.
Ooh, a tease.
So welcome back to Rain on Your Parade, and we're going to get into what I know best, stand-up comedy. And, well, I know a lot of things best, let's be honest. I'm sort of a jack of all trades, which, by the way, social media and YouTube algorithms hate that. They hate when you try to do different things.
Trying to put you in a box, man.
Well, they really do. It's like, I assume with my 66,000 YouTube subscribers, oh, if I'm making a comedy video, they'll love it. It's like, no, is it Trump? Is it a Trump impersonation? No, we're not even going to show it to your people.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I did this really funny book review. Like nobody does book reviews, but you know what? If I've got these subscribers who like my humor, Maybe if 5,000 of them get into it, that's pretty cool. 500 views for the most, the one with the most. I have 66,000 subscribers. 500 views is the most I have at this recording for a book review. It's pretty awful.
Yeah.
My special, Tall Boy. Oh, well, people have been watching and subscribing to me for years. And this is my first special and it's free. They're going to eat this up. They're not eating it up. We'll leave it at that. They are not. They are going, I'm full.
Surprise, surprise.
I'm full. I'll pass on. I love your comedy, except 98% of your comedy. And the problem is, and this, I like to make it personal. I start personally and I go global.
Yeah.
That's my, don't share these tips and secrets with your other podcasters. Mm-hmm. This is proprietary technique right here.
Trade secrets.
Yeah, it really is. But, a lot of my subscribers and followers, if we're going on Twitter, don't even see my stuff. So they have self-identified as fans by following and subscribing. And then YouTube doesn't even show them my stuff to choose. Oh, I'll pass on this. They don't even see it. And it's made me realize that while actors and writers are fighting AI, they see the danger. They have big egos. Comedy is different. Comedy is full of scumbags. Is that the right word? Who aren't artists. They're people who don't want jobs. You're laughing, but you know I speak truth.
I mean, that's the way to put it.
Now, I chose comedy because I needed a hobby. I was in law school. I was headed towards a great career. You know, not really, but I thought I was. But I was going to a good law school, but I was depressed. Comedy was a hobby. And it turned out I had a decent level of skill and facility at it. And I got better and better. And then some opportunities came my way. And I stuck with it because I really do love coming up with a good idea, crafting an original joke, and then making strangers laugh at it for validation of that creation. There's a lot of comics like me, plenty of comics. That's the main reason to do it. But this new shit that we're in the mumble rap phase of stand-up comedy, I think, where it's all about, you know, TikTok is the SoundCloud of stand-up comedy now, where
yeah,
it's like,
it is.
I'm not, you could see it with music. I would make a four verse lyrically genius story like Biggie or Ice Cube or Tupac or Wu-Tang Clan or Tribe Called Quest. But I'd rather make a 90 second one verse thing that sounds like everybody else, put it on SoundCloud and get the streams. And then that validates me as an artist. I've done almost nothing worthy of being called artistry, but now I have 500 million streams or whatever. And now I'm a big hit.
Yeah.
Even though this was like, I'm literally allowing the device mechanism to determine what I make. And when I see TikTok and what comics are doing, now there's plenty of established comics who are playing the game, but are real comics. But a lot of new jacks, if I can call them that, are really, they're jumping the system. They're gaming the system by doing crowd work and different things. And making that the like driving force of their stand-up comedy, where it's like, but didn't you get into this to make like to do something other than win over TikTok? And the answer is no.
No, the answer is no.
The answer is no. And I think that is a far, like in other words, actors and actresses and writers are like, don't you come for our jobs, AI. Whereas comics now, especially new comics, are basically like, AI, place your penis in my mouth. I'll make you come. You don't have to replace me. I'll be your slave. Just put a gag ball in my mouth, choke me, and I'll, step on my nuts, AI. Yeah. Like AI and comedians are in this like dominatrix like relationship where it's just like, yes, yeah, spit on me and call me useless.
And who do you think the sub is? It's comedians. Comedians are the ones getting dominated.
Yeah, of course. It's this bizarre thing where it's like, oh, AI's already won.
Yeah.
Stand-up comedy.
Oh, yeah.
Like, because we are doing, you need to do reels. And from the format to the technique to the content, we are delivering what TikTok and reels wants.
Yeah.
We're not changing the game. We're just saying, yeah, fine.
Yeah, we're conforming.
You know, and if you look at TikTok, the model for TikTok is copy.
Yeah.
Not original. Copy. That should be the exact opposite. That should be disgusting to an artist. Yeah. Like, ew, wait, copying is now the thing? Whether it be lip syncing or doing a trend. I love the idea of a TikTok challenge. To be a TikTok challenge, you know what you need to be? Not challenging, because the goal is replication, not challenging. It's literally like dancing. Let's take dancing.
Yeah.
Oh my God, did you see Michael Jackson dance? You know why that's amazing? Because I can't do that.
Right.
You're right. Oh my God, Michael Jackson, amazing. That's why he's so great.
Yeah.
Now it's like, I'm pantomiming basically what amounts to a childhood Barney special. That's a TikTok challenge. You pick a popular song and then you do a couple things that everybody can repeat and you call that a challenge. Excuse me. Oh, that's challenge calling from the dictionary saying, fuck off. That's the opposite of a challenge. But that's what it is now. It's about replicating, because the goal is not artistry or originality. It's getting big.
Yeah.
And comedy is like, you know, it's the Kardashian model. It all comes, I mean, I talk about this on Tall Boy, my special, check it out. But the Kardashian model sort of created this world. Like they are, in my mind, crypto celebrities. They had nothing. But through shamelessness and drive, they created a brand. And it's very much like if one day you decide that talent is once again necessary to being famous in the entertainment world, they vanish.
Yeah.
They vanish. They are without talent. But they created, they're like sort of one of the early models of like, no, if you just are ambitious enough to be famous and want to do something and become rich, you can just kind of create out of whole cloth a celebrity now. And that's what people see me doing on TikTok, where it's like the goal is, I can't fathom like, oh, if you copy this dance that somebody else did, well, you won't get a million followers like them, but you might get 40,000.
Yeah.
And that's the goal.
Yeah.
I've done nothing original. I've created nothing. Some of my friends probably find me embarrassing, as they should, but I've got more followers now. And I don't know what that does, but it can be good. Mm-hmm. And it's validation. And when you see stand-up comics doing it, it's like they had a decision to make collectively. Obviously, there is no collective group because you cannot organize labor whose default mindset is backstabbing scab. You know I'm right.
Yes.
Like labor works because people care about each other. Comedy, the default mindset of a comedian, the highest level of labor in comedy is, I'll give you a ride home from the show.
Yes. You're fun to hang out with on the way to the show.
I'll pay an extra $100 for doing the show.
Yeah.
The median level is I'll take that guy's fucking gig. Fuck him.
Yes.
Then the bottom, the comedy scab, the scab version of a comedy laborer is, well, before she passed out, she wanted it.
Yeah.
That's stand-up comedy scabs. Are sexual assaulting predators.
Yes.
Not picket crossers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. The picket crossing line is the good guy in comedy. And the great guy is, I had a good set. Here's an extra $100.
Yeah.
So I'll ask the club to pay for your hotel. Yeah. That's like, oh my God, fucking Jimmy Hoffa meets A. Philip Randolph. You don't know who I'm talking about, but so when I see people, and we can get into Matt Rife at a later time, but you
it's at the top of the pyramid. I didn't know it was his Coke. His name wasn't on it.
It's a horrible industry. And I only bring up Matt Rife because he has proven he's the counter to what I'm saying, which is, but if you do this, there's a chance you can come wild. Your career can wildly outpace your talent, writing, and material.
Yeah.
And that's not meant as a knock on him, but you know, he has made this kind of the default model now for comedy. The reason we're filming this podcast at all is because it's no longer good enough to just be good on the mic. You have to win over TikTok and Instagram algorithms. But as a comedian, I don't ever put out crowd work. I put out one crowd work because it was really funny, not because I was, you know, when I see the forced Q&A, this bullshit.
Yeah.
What are you doing? You know, what? Oh, was that talking to Mike? Oh, what are you doing crowd work? I paid you. I come to a show. Oh, it's one. Bon Jovi wants me to sing along to Living on a Prayer and my wife wants to sing. She can sing. It's okay. But you want me to fill you in with an entire act? Aren't you embarrassed? But that's it. That's in a nutshell, jokes have been made by the kings of comedy, right? The original kings of comedy. I forget. I think it was Cedric the Entertainer or Steve Harvey who basically did you sing the song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a joke. Obviously, people like singing along, but it's like the mindset is like, I paid, you perform.
Right.
Now it's like, well, you are secondary audience. You were an important part of the stand-up comedy experience, but now my pimp TikTok says he's gonna slap me real good if I don't put up crowd work material. Bitch, I said ask them if they smoke weed. Did you ask them? Let me see the video. Daddy, I'm sorry. I wanted to work on jokes, Daddy. I wrote this really good bit. Bitch, I got a bit. It's called Bitch Doesn't Pay Attention to What TikTok Algorithm Wants. That's where we're at. Yeah. TikTok is a pimp. And we're all walking around going, I'm sorry, Daddy. I'm sorry, Daddy. And it's incredible to see, because I've seen features doing Q&As. In all due respect, as somebody who respects the road comic more than just about fucking anybody on this planet.
Yeah.
Who the fuck are you to take time out of your middle set of 20 minutes? First of all, if you gave a shit, you'd realize how precious those minutes are to work on your material. But on top of that, they're here to see the other guy or girl.
Yeah.
Or non-binary. They're not here to do, but then this is the real kicker. I'm talking to a guy who works with a comedy club, and he said they got a complaint one night, not like a hardcore complaint, but just a comment. Oh, there wasn't a lot of, I wanted more crowd work.
That's really funny. Yeah, you're training comedy audiences to think that they're part of the show.
We fought, you know, so long, the shut up heckler. But then it starts with comedian destroys heckler.
Right.
Then more comics want that.
Right.
Now it's, well, TikTok said, no, we want and you can see a lot of crowd work comedians, you see just how fucking dumb they are as people. But it doesn't matter because people are dumb.
Right.
I've seen crowd work where they don't understand what, like, somebody mentions a college they've never heard of or a job that they're not familiar with. They're like, is that even a real thing, bro? Yes, you dumb fuck. Now tell some jokes. I'm not the comedian.
Yeah.
Is that even a real, you went there? I don't even know. Is that like a fake school? No, Columbia. I went to Columbia. Like the country? You do coke? Stupid people laugh. No, it's a it's a prestigious university in New York where you're performing. Oh shit. Well, I guess I'm dumb. Ha ha ha. Million views on TikTok. We're killing it. But comedians, unlike actors and actresses and writers, comedians are like midwifing our own demise. We're like, I'm willing to just be a fucking pandering tool of algorithms to get a little ahead, to get a little ahead. And that's why comedy is just rife with scumbags. That's called a bar. And I don't mean that as it, but you know, it is a word. It is a word. It doesn't,
it's just
mean,
funny how it worked out.
Yeah, it did. But yeah, comics, we're killing our own business and we're okay with it. And the ones who have established themselves don't care.
Yeah.
They're where they need to be. The up and comers have no respect, no desire, it seems, to be true artists. And the algorithms are validating those pursuits, because I'm sure there are real artists out there, real comedians struggling, trying to work on the material. And we don't know who the fuck they are because that's no longer being elevated. But instead of fighting it the way the actors are, comedians are like, yes, algorithm daddy.
Yeah.
Like, I'll suck your dick. Just stop hitting me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there it is. So we're going to take another quick break, and then you'll get your comedy recommendation for the week when we return. So we're back, and obviously this is the comedy recommendation portion of the show. I should say criticism. It can, you know, there may be some examples in later episodes where I'm criticizing, but right now it's all positive. It's all good vibes. But one last thing before I get to that. One common thing that comedians will sometimes say about putting up all that crowd work stuff, and don't get me wrong, some comedians are really good at it. This isn't a blanket statement, but it is a blanket statement about like the newer people who are like living on that. It's like, you're not even good on stage yet, but you're jumping the line using the algorithm. But people will say, I don't want to burn my material. Well, for the new comics, I'd say in a few years, you'll probably want to burn all your material because it probably sucks. And I say that from experience. But to older comics, I'd say, why not write more material? Like once in a while. I don't get like, I don't mean to toot my own horn, but I'm a fairly prolific guy and I'm a nobody. Write more, put out more good stuff. Let's encourage real stand-up comedy. Let's preserve the art and not capitulate to an algorithm that could care less about the future, past, or present of stand-up comedy. So, speaking of present stand-up comedy, my recommendation this week, it's from late 2022. I lost my job a few weeks ago and I got to like really catch up on a lot of content, or as I like to say, content. And I watched Shang Wang, Sweet and Juicy on Netflix. Now, Shang is a guy I knew many years ago, was always a really nice guy. It's one of those things I realize in comedy. Whenever I say somebody's like really cool, it's always the guy that everybody likes. That's how I know I'm a dick. Because like the 10 people, I'll be like, oh, he's awesome. I'm like, everybody thinks he's awesome.
Yeah.
But as soon as I'm like, oh, those guys like me, it's like, well, they're the guys who like everybody. They're kind and generous and sweet people. Anybody who has differing opinions is going to be like, Jail's kind of a dick.
Yeah.
So Shang, I think, is one of those guys who's probably just chill and cool with everybody. But I hadn't seen him in a long time. And Ali Wong produced his special for Netflix. Like I said, I think it came out in like late 2022. But it was so good. And the way I described Ari Shaffir's special, you know, as kind of like one man showish, but pure stand-up comedy. Mm-hmm. I liked that about it, that it wasn't some retreat into another art form, but it kind of was almost, he was able to bring stand-up comedy timing and energy, but to almost a thematic show like Goldman's The Great Depression. Shang Wang's what I will say, and this is not meant as shade, it's like watching somebody hit doubles for an hour straight. And when I say that, I mean a double is a good thing.
Yes.
And there's no let up. I don't know if I ever had any, I didn't have a lot of huge laughs, but about 20 minutes in, I was just kind of like, this guy just keeps like cracking up the middle in the gap, like to make a baseball analogy for people who don't know what I'm talking about.
He's Eric Karras. He's Todd Hundley.
I think of him as better than that. I think of the special as better than that.
Wow. Okay. All right. That wasn't a knock either. Todd Hundley, I mean, one of the Mets. Fifth all time on the Mets home run.
Yeah, great.
You can hit. Hit and catcher.
Second rate franchise. I'm thinking more Mel Hall, who I remember led the league in doubles 1 year for the Yankees before he became a child rapist.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, that's so just to, I don't want to conflate that. I want Shang Wang as Mel Hall pre. No, that was just to make a salacious comment. It's one of those things I can't underestimate how impressive it is to have like an hour where you're at this even pace. It's never too jokey and it's never too like, here's a really long story with a great punchline. It's just like somebody who just, here comes my pitch, bam. Here comes my pitch, bam.
And into the gap again for Mel Hall.
And by gap, we mean underage pussy.
Oh, God.
Oh, and I have to say something. Not afraid of making pussy jokes. That's for people who enjoy my Ron Reagan Jr. impression, which was a staple of my earlier podcast. And I'd like to bring him back as a sometimes co-host.
Ron Reagan Jr.
The most condescending atheist on planet Earth. Makes Bill Maher look like a measured, like.
Yeah.
Ron Reagan, he used to have these commercials where he'd end it by going, Ron Reagan Jr., not afraid of burning in hell. Yes. And I loved it. I thought it was hilarious. And I was like, does he make, my question for him was always, does he make more people turn to Christianity?
Yeah.
With how dripping in condescension he is.
Yeah.
But he's toned it down. I did that joke for like a year plus on my podcast. And then all of a sudden there was a new slate of commercials. I kid you not, where he was just going, Ron Reagan Jr., not afraid of burning in hell. And I was like, you toned it down, Ron. All right. That's what we're doing with this podcast. We're effecting change in the world. Mm. But the point is Shang Wang, Sweet and Juicy. I highly recommend it. And it's a different, it was one of those where I'm watching, I'm going, oh, this is pretty good. It has like a cumulative effect because by the end of the hour, I was like, God, I just witnessed a guy, man, like, you can kill. You can have a bit kill. But this was like a sustained beatdown, but not a kill. It's more like, man, I'm just watching like a technician who knows his pace, his tone, and every joke is working. And it's a weird thing because I'm trying, you know, in the spirit of this podcast, I could get up and go, it's great. So to translate for anybody who needs like simple adjectives, it's a great special, but it's great in a way that I found unique because it was just like this sustained, it was like watching a boxer win a 15 round fight by outclassing the other guy for 15 rounds. Like just boop, boop, jab, jab, defense, jab, jab. Like,
yeah.
But it wasn't Mike Tyson 6 rounds slaughter that some people would be like, oh my God. So I loved it. Shang Wang, Sweet and Juicy. That's your recommendation for stand-up recommendation for the week. Thank you for listening to Rain on Your Parade. I'm JL Covan. Thank you, Mike. And we will see you next Tuesday, even if the episodes don't come out on a Tuesday.